Hi, and welcome to this week's Three Legs, Four Wheels F1 podcast. It's Paul with...
No one.
Yep, it's the Eric Boulier show. Nobody's got anything to say.
This is the 20 podcast or... 29th podcast plot twist where it turns out this is all in Paul's head. And it's gone full on Fight Club.
Believe me, if you are a product of my imagination, I am seeing a shrink first thing in the morning.
So am I.
You might have noticed Chris is back from Australia, and did you bring an accent with you?
No.
Good.
Not yet.
Yet.
Yeah, you brought all the accents. You always bring all the accents.
Apparently so.
Yeah,
apparently you've had three podcasts without any accents.
Three podcasts that you've been away for and not one accent in a lot of them because, well...
We've got our own natural accents. I have boring.
I've got cynical.
You have cynical.
And Dan's got a southern. Dan's got something from Waitrose. Dan's away this week being a secret agent somewhere, or secret Asian or something.
Something like that. He's being secret anyway. Yeah. Secret Dan.
So, Mexico.
It happened.
It did happen.
It was all right.
We always say that about every race, about that it happened.
It did happen.
It did happen.
I enjoyed it though. Obviously, yeah,
it was a good race.
There was nothing spectacular that happened through most of the race, but there was enough all the way through to keep me entertained.
Yeah. You didn't have to get the Lego out.
No.
Virtual Lego.
Yeah, it is the Minecraft.
Yeah.
But I was a little bit disappointed when I learned that they were going back to Mexico and they got rid of the Peraltada, the last final turn, sort of similar to the Parabolica in Monza.
Mm.
Now that I've seen what they've done and I've seen how it works, it's brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. Like, turn Formula 1 into a stadium sport.
When I saw that they'd actually cut the track through a baseball stadium, I thought actually Herman Tilke's managed to cock up two sports at once.
It's not too Herman Tilke though, is it?
It still reminds me of, because it looks a bit like Monza, like we said when we were looking at it on the podcast, it looks a bit like Monza, but watching the cars on it, it reminded me more of if you took all the big straights and Eau Rouge out of Spa. The twisty bits were very Spa-like.
Yeah, sort of. Yeah, I know what you mean. So there were the S's and that on the way down back towards the stadium section. They tended to flow quite well.
That classic European circuit feel to it.
Yeah, almost.
I liked it.
In Central America.
Yeah, European circuits nowhere near Europe.
It's in the DNA of it.
Yeah, but it's still a classic circuit. That's what I mean. I think I know what you're getting at. It's still a classic circuit, but
it's
just
grass.
Had to be. Yeah,
grass.
Yeah,
actual grass.
It's not been bollocksed up as much as Hockenheim was bollocksed up.
No, I mean, there's not like 10 miles of runoff. The track isn't like 20 car widths wide. If you make an error, it doesn't matter. We saw a few drivers making errors, and it did matter.
To be perfectly honest, Joseph Fritzl's family wasn't bollocksed up as much as that circuit was bollocked up.
Oh, God. I've only been back for 5 minutes.
You've been back 5 minutes? He's going back 5 years.
Say what you want, but that man provided for his family. Both of them.
Oh, dear.
Don't make me play the Jack track.
Jack attack time, isn't it? But yeah, obviously the big story come out of Mexico was that Nico Rosberg beat Lewis Hamilton. Actually took advantage of having a pole position for the first time in four races. Managed to make it stick. Had been quicker pretty much all weekend. And basically, was the better driver on the day.
Yeah, won it on the day. And to be honest, you can win what you want on a Saturday afternoon, but that doesn't matter until you turn it into what you can do on a Sunday afternoon.
I was really surprised when the safety car came out.
Didn't think you wanted a safety car, but because
especially when Rosberg messed his restart up as well, because he was trying to back Hamilton up, but he never bolted, so Hamilton was glued onto the back of him, going down the main straight, and I disagree.
I think he did bolt, but Hamilton sort of outthought him and bolted at the same time because he knew when he was going to go for it.
Maybe, but yeah, I'd have put that down a restart situation with new tyres on, I'd have always had Hamilton over Rosberg every time. I was really surprised. I was quite sad because I really wanted to see Rosberg upset on the podium.
Yeah, I think it was.
You're a sadist, really, aren't you?
I think we've seen enough of that as well already this year. Rosberg upset on the podium.
No. That's just the gift that keeps giving.
You just wanted to see what kind of distance he could get on a sombrero throw, weren't you? I mean, you get a good frisbee on them.
He's not known on the old Formula One television world as being a funny guy, but Simon Lazenby, when they were doing the build up to the race, Lewis Hamilton was stood out. You know, on the they got off the trucks to wave at fans and stuff. And someone ran over to Lewis Hamilton and gave him 10 hats to throw to the crowd. And you heard Simon Lazenby come over the microphone going, "Oh, good God, they're giving 10 this time."
Yeah, which was, that was something to behold, watching Lewis Hamilton throw caps into the crowd.
Yeah, I noticed the first one only actually made it to the first row. Nico got something thrown to the crowd as well, and they made it all the way to the back of the stand. He's had more practice.
He's had a lot more practice.
Tell you what, that shows us a crowd that's really up for a race, that cheer for Nico Rosberg while he's going to have his car.
Yeah, I mean, to be fair though, he
thoroughly deserves it. He just doesn't usually get it.
No, that's it, absolutely. We've said many times in the past he's his own worst enemy, can't capitalise when Hamilton makes mistakes. The weekend went his way. Unfortunately, it's at least one weekend too late, and probably a good. You know, it's no good having a good weekend late in October.
Yeah, I would say it's 2 months too late, because this is the kind of thing that he should have been doing from Belgium onwards.
If not before that, but
he should have been doing it from Belgium last year onwards.
Well, yes.
Well, he tried that at Belgium last year, didn't he? We all know what happened there. But just one quick thing I want to mention as well is the tyre situation, where they surprisingly called the Mercs in for a second tyre stop because they were so far ahead of the Red Bulls in third as they were at the time.
I think it was fair, but had
the championship still been in the balance, do you think Lewis Hamilton would have come in for that stop?
I think it would have been a brave man that made him.
I reckon if Bono would have come on the radio and told him to box, it would have been would have heard the FIA beat machine.
Yeah, I think so.
They would have hit the Kimmy button.
I tell you what, I bet the debrief after the race was a pretty icy atmosphere
in the Mercedes.
Mm. Yeah, well, Hamilton and Rosberg were in the same room. Of course, it was going to be icy.
Yeah, I think the other thing you've got to think for Hamilton as well is he probably thinks still, even though he's won the championship, that he's still owed a win from Monaco.
I know what you mean, but I mean, at the end of the day, he's got the championship in the bag, and that's why I don't think he was particularly Lewis Hamilton about it. He was much more. He questioned it, and he made sure everybody knew that he was questioning it by saying so over the team radio a couple of times.
Yeah.
But I think if the championship had still been in the balance, they brought Rosberg in and left Hamilton out, I don't think you would have seen Hamilton pit. I think you would have seen Hamilton maybe.
I think Rosberg would have had him anyway on these tyres.
But the safety car would have completely knackered Hamilton's race in that case anyway. Because
of course,
the safety
car
came out, they would have all bunched up.
If Nico had pitted, depending on where Hamilton was when the safety car came out, he could have pitted then and then come out in front of Nico.
Possibly. Possibly. Yeah, I didn't think of it that way. But yeah, I think that Lewis Hamilton would have stayed out given the tyre situation. I mean, a lot of other drivers did. I mean, we saw Valtteri Bottas, obviously he got third in the race, capitalised on the restart, managed to jump. Kvyat.
Obviously, having no Ferraris finishing kind of helped that as well.
Yeah, Norm, we've been so used to having Hamilton, Rosberg, and Vettel in some order on the podium, but Vettel.
To finish first you must finish.
But he finished a fin.
Yeah, the two fins came together, didn't they? Yeah. Finished Kimi Raikkonen's race. What's your view on the situation, the Raikkonen and Bottas?
Racing incident.
Racing incident, but I do think Bottas had the opportunity to get out of the out of it.
Yeah,
because even if he had a bit more room, he was still going to run wide. You know, it's that corner is such a tight corner that even if Kimi had given him a car length, he'd have still gone into the side of him.
If you watch the replay, Bottas' wheels do lock up before they get to the corner. So, in a way,
Bottas was locking up into the first corner.
Yeah, and he locked up into the second one. He tried to think about getting out of it, and then
he just went into the whole thing too hot.
But Kimi did come across him at the same time. It's difficult to blame anyone. I actually think that Kimi should have known better than to do that. With the experience that Kimi's got.
I don't know where Kimi could have been not to get hit. That's what I mean.
Kimi could have just run out wide and then been like... Because Bottas was never going to make the move from where he was anyway. And unless Kimi...
Kimi let him through. If Kimi gone wide, he'd have let him through, but it's not... It's not Kimi's job to help Bottas' move.
Oh, no. What I'm saying is if Kimi had just allowed Bottas, because Bottas was going to run, he came in at too tight an angle at that corner. Bottas was going to run wide anyway, so if Kimi ran wide, he probably would have maintained position.
I'd also argue the position he was from, Kimi would have known, he'd have known Bottas was there, but he wouldn't have seen him how he was coming in and how hot he was coming in.
No, possibly not. Especially not for that second part of the turn. Anyway.
I think it's a real shame for Kimi as well, because I think he would have had Bottas' podium if he'd have still been in the race.
Possibly, yeah.
Yeah, I mean he was this week's Carlos Sainz.
He was.
Back to the front. Yeah. And just done purely on skill. Mm. Not all of a sudden he's turned into a 19. Well,
Kimi is one of those guys, isn't he? If you stick him at the back of the grid, he'll find his way.
He'll find his way forward. Oh, yeah. He always does.
Yeah.
But no. I mean, props to Valtteri Bottas for finishing third. It was not really something that was predicted before the race, he did very well to be the best of the rest.
Yeah. Gotta say, I agree with Red Bull talking about the rest. Kvyat was pretty strong this weekend.
Yeah, Danny Kvyat, I said in the live blog yesterday, was driving an absolutely spot-on race up to the second pit stops. I don't know what happened there, but they managed to allow the Williams to close up quite close to them, and then they had the safety car, and then, of course, Valtteri Bottas managed to get ahead of Kvyat. So I do feel as though Danny Kvyat sort of had his podium taken away from him by his team. Although... You know, you can argue that all day long.
It's making him look a safer prospect for next year should Red Bull stay in, but obviously we'll look at that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we'll look at
that later on.
Yeah.
But, at one point we were talking about when, not if, Red Bull get rid of him.
Yeah, we were.
Earlier on this season. I think that race was kind of indicative of his season, the way that he's turned everything round. He's listening to the team. He's actually learning from his mistakes, which is something that I'd certainly say up to Silverstone he wasn't doing. He was just planting his foot, going for it, and if the team told him to back off, it's like, no, I'm not gonna.
Yeah.
This car goes fast, I go fast.
Mm-hmm. That's it.
But
Danny Ricciardo had quite a quiet race, didn't he? Really, we didn't see an awful.
He didn't seem to take to that circuit, did he?
No, he sort of held station. But I mean, if we can just reflect just for a second on what Red Bull and Renault actually achieved at Mexico, similar to what they achieved in Austin,
the fact that they were keeping up, each car was keeping up with the faster Williams in front of them.
Absolutely, yeah, and even I'm sure I'm not. To my discredit, listen to the Austin podcast yet. I'm not that far along.
There's no accents on it. I'll give you a spoiler.
Well, maybe it's because I wasn't on it. But the but even in those conditions, for the Red Bulls to manage to get ahead of the Mercedes at one point, it's a testament to how far Renault have actually come. And I'm sure at the end of the season we'll do some sort of most improved award, and my front runner for that at the moment is Renault as an engine manufacturer, purely because of how far the Toro Rossos and the Red Bulls have come.
Yeah.
Especially in the second half of the season.
Oh yeah, definitely. Yeah, definitely agree with you. We need categories for the three legs, four wheels inaugural awards.
Yes, we do. Absolutely. Yeah.
So if you can think of any, send us a tweet at three legs, four wheels.
Yeah.
And if any companies want to sponsor them,
yeah, if you want to sponsor an award for anything, just let us know.
Yeah, nobody actually gets a physical presentation. It's just that you might get your name mentioned.
Yeah. You will get your name mentioned if you sponsor an award. That's how it works.
As long as we remember to write it down and don't forget.
Absolutely, yeah. Because if we don't write things down, we tend to forget them. We're forgetful like that. What did I write down next?
What did you write down next?
Well, we were talking about Red Bull and if you know, Red Bull possibly staying in the sport.
Yeah, what's going to be powering that car?
While I was in Australia, the man who was fronting the coverage there decided that Red Bull were... He was quite adamant, actually, that Red Bull were going to be running Renault engines next year, and a deal was being done to rebrand the engines under the Infiniti.
But it's kind of what they were. That's kind of now, isn't it?
Yeah, but
the Infiniti. They were Infiniti Red Bull, Renault.
Yeah.
Yeah, Infiniti Red Bull Renault. So what would they be? That would they be Infiniti Red Bull Infiniti or just Red Bull Infiniti?
Red Bull Infiniti.
But I mean, why would
Williams Mechachrome and Benetton Playlife?
There's a few things that need to be taken into consideration here that we don't really know. Yeah. First of all, do Renault really have an option not to supply them? If
they cancel the contract, then yes, they don't have to supply them.
No, but that's if that contract hasn't been cancelled.
Which it hasn't to date.
Yeah. So, as far as Red Bull are concerned, then they're saying they haven't got an engine at the minute. But surely, if they've got a contract with Renault, they have a Renault engine for next year, whether or not all parties hate each other.
Well, it's a premium supplier thing, isn't it? That's where the sticking point is. It's that Red Bull have to be the premium.
Yeah, so then the problem is will Red Bull stop Renault buying Lotus if that's what Renault actually want to do?
Will Red Bull stop Renault buying Lotus? If
Renault have the premium supplier goes to Red Bull and that's in the deal. Does that mean then, if Red Bull keep Renault engines, that they're not allowed a works team because Red Bull won't be the premium engine?
But isn't there the new regulation in there that customer teams have to be supplied with the same spec and class of engine as the factory team?
Yeah, that's a product thing, isn't it? But when you're talking about being like the premium supplied customer, then you're talking about having team members and, you know, you're essentially the works team. If they have a works team, then they're not the works team.
It's a de facto works team.
Yeah.
Yeah, whereas if Renault have a works team in Formula One next year, I can't see that, you know, anything other than Renault's interest being Renault.
And on the other side of that, it's what would be in it for Renault, for the Renault engines to be branded Infiniti?
Less of a liability, because then Red Bull could spend all the time slagging off Nissan.
Yeah, less of a that's what it is. It's because the relationship has broken down so much,
But isn't that a bit pathetic?
Yeah, it is, but it's something that was being looked at, and this is just the.
I know it's just conjecture, isn't it? But the
plus Infiniti is a joint venture between Renault and Nissan, I believe.
Do you know what? Two weeks ago, when we were doing this podcast, I was convinced that something was going to come Red Bull's way. But the longer this is going on, the more I can't see them being on the grid next year.
I think they'll be on the grid.
Christian Horner said that team will be on the grid in one form or another.
Not this weekend, he didn't. This weekend, he was much more solemn about it. Saying that, well, we don't know until Dietrich's made his mind up. Ted Kravitz turned round to him and said, is this the point we're at now? Has Dietrich got all the information on his desk and he then has to make an opinion based on the information he's been given? And Christian Horner said there's probably one or two more factors there, but that's kind of the situation we're in.
I wonder if, just sort of thinking out loud, if the prospective Force India Aston Martin deal, which is being banded around at the moment, was Aston Martin on a fact-finding mission of how much they have to do to run a Formula One team before they actually dip in and buy Red Bull.
Well, is Aston Martin's, is that, it's Mercedes owned, isn't it?
Partially.
Partially. Yeah.
Partially.
5% of Aston Martin is owned by Mercedes.
I don't, I mean...
It's just going to be very strange seeing a Force India without...
What would happen then?
Non-VJ Mallya branding on it. Well, unless VJ Mallya is going to buy 5% of Aston Martin.
It's just Jaguar again, isn't it? It's Jaguar all over again.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
Maybe the Jaguar Formula 1 team, but yeah. Aston Martin Formula 1 team.
Yeah. Well, I don't know, because I mean, with Jaguar, they were owned by Ford, and Cosworth put the engines in the back of the original, back of the Jaguars.
Yeah.
So there was at least some kind of... Because Jaguar were fully owned by Ford at the time.
At the time. Well, Aston Martin have been, at some point in the past as well, fully owned by Ford.
Mm.
But they're not at the moment, of course, but...
But,
I think it's just a clever branding thing, isn't it?
Or is it a precursor to Aston Martin supplying one of the cheaper engines, the twin turbos for 2017?
Possibly.
It gets them a back door in there.
I'm convinced that if the cheaper engine thing comes off, that they will be Cosworths. Convinced of it.
Well, Ilmor want in with that as well.
Do they?
Yeah. Now that Mercedes don't own, they're a completely separate company.
Yeah. It's only been put out to tender for one company, isn't it?
Two companies.
That's good.
Yeah, because Cosworth asked, you know, they not.
I think Cosworth have been instructed by Bernie that they are going to tender for it.
Yeah, I mean, not too long ago they moved into a factory. I think it was about 2010, something like that. They moved into a factory which allowed them to mass produce engines for motorsports such as Formula One. When they were, because if you remember, it was HRT Cosworth, wasn't it? And
Caterham Cosworth, and
were Caterham Cosworth when they first started?
Yeah, and Lotus. so were Virgin. All three of the new teams came in with Cosworth engines.
Mm.
Yeah.
And which at the same time, I think Cosworth were powering the entirety of the Indy Racing League, but not IndyCar, because that was when they had two. They were powering one of the IndyCar series' entire grids as well.
Cosworth did build a turbo V6 engine for 2014 regulations for Formula One. Didn't test it, and were never asked to supply them, so they didn't go ahead with it.
Mm.
So they have the capacity to do it, but what you've got to remember is Cosworth is an independent engine manufacturer. Has to have the funds up front in order to provide these engines.
Mm.
That then calls into question what Jean Todt was talking about this weekend of capping the engine prices again at 12 million, was it $12 million?
12 million euros, I think.
Euros, sorry.
Well, but that's the whole point of these new engines is that they would be cheaper, isn't it?
Yeah, but they haven't been, this is the thing.
This is why the...
The new ones would be capped. I don't think he actually made an announcement on the twin turbos, but the current hybrid turbo V6s
mm-hmm.
would be capped at 12 million.
Yeah.
And if the second formula engines come in, a price cap would be announced for those if they were allowed.
What I'm saying is if two engine manufacturers, let's say for instance Cosworth and Ilmor, go forward and say, all right, okay, we want to produce these cheaper, in inverted commas, engines for Formula One, and they're going to be capped at 12 million euros, dollars, whatever it is.
Bernie books.
No, but yeah,
where are teams still going to find? Because they won't be able to be like, oh, well, oh, yeah. They can't do like a Lotus or a Manor and be like, well, owe you $12 million for each engine and just supply them.
I don't see why. Let's face it, we're not talking about small companies here. They could float the engine cost.
No, Cosworth and Ilmor are small companies.
I still think they could, if they were supplying two teams, they could float that for the year.
The thing is, though, it all depends on how much...
Bernie backing.
Yeah, how much Bernie backing they get, and how much money do FOM want up front to be allowed to be part of the circus. And if Bernie has... Well, Bernie strongly hinted that Cosworth should be back in Formula One in the last few weeks.
But don't forget as well that when we were talking about these new engines, they won't be under the same rules and guidelines as the The hybrids, will they?
Some rules, yeah, like the.
But I wouldn't have thought.
The development freeze after.
I mean the cost cap.
No, they'd have their own cost cap.
Yeah. So that it'll be a completely different situation.
Yeah, but what I was saying was these two, the two successful companies would actually have to front up an amount of cash and pay it to FOM to be allowed to supply, and then try and recoup the cost through selling their engines. If Bernie wants Cosworth back in that desperately, is he going to tell Cosworth that, yeah, you can supply engines, buy us a pint?
Have they fucked it? Like, as in, with the idea for these cheaper twin turbo engines, should that have been the idea last year to go to the twin turbos as a stepping stone to go to the hybrids?
I don't know.
No, because they're still going to be...
There's still going to be hybrids on the grid in 2017.
Yeah, I know, but when...
Should they have done a few years on twin turbos first, yes, and moved on to full hybrids?
Because
I think the problem there is they've never considered it, because I don't think they, at the time, knew just how much cost for development...
See, there must have been an idea, because they were developing the engines, so if you're developing these engines and you know...
But how much the ongoing cost for them would be as well.
Yeah, but if, when you look at the... But when you're developing the engine, you know how much money you're pouring in. It's a business, isn't it? There must have been a fucking business model in place where they knew how much they were going to have to charge for these.
Oh, there's a business model. Bernie says do it, and the manufacturers carry that off because they have to do it to be part of the sport.
Yeah, but Bernie didn't want the hybrid engines. He wants everything to...
No, it was the engine manufacturers that said... Was it not Mercedes that said, look, if you don't go to... engine. If you don't go to... it was Renault, I think, actually, sorry. Who said, if you don't go to hybrid engines, we're going to pull out of the sport.
Mm. Mm. Yeah, because they wanted turbos because the normally aspirated engine wasn't going to be as powerful with future regulations, because they said they'd taken it as far as they could.
And also, what I am keenly watching, as is everybody going to be watching next year, is the progress of Honda. Because... I think Honda's performance this year has put off any other manufacturers who were looking to come into Formula One. Namely, the kings of twin turbos, BMW. Mm.
Do you think they've really put them off?
I think it has, yeah. Because they've seen how difficult it is for a massive engine manufacturer like Honda to go with. Honda aren't chumps.
No, they're not. They're not chumps, but they're not... they're not helping themselves by not looking for help. If you know what I mean, Joe, they're not. They're trying to sort everything out in house. It's not like there was all the bollocks about the glory days of McLaren, Honda, and all this. But
that was marketing more than anything.
But the last time Honda win, it's not like they set the fucking world alight. So you know.
Yeah, but that was the car and not the engine. All that Honda proved after they bought BAR was they can't make cars.
Yeah.
They can't design cars.
They can build engines.
They built great engines. Mm. Although the last ever one that was in a Formula One car wasn't exactly great at the final Grand Prix of Honda's final season, and Jensen gets out of the car and it bursts into flames.
Yeah.
Yeah, then the next year he wins the championship.
Yeah.
Yeah.
With a Mercedes engine in the back of his Braun.
Yeah.
Which Ross Braun and his team had designed.
Yeah.
But Honda just got things spectacularly wrong because they were trying to take on too much and prove that they couldn't do the whole package, but they could do an engine.
They seem to be really good at getting things spectacularly wrong in Formula One.
No, but usually involved now they're
just
button.
Yeah, but now they're just doing engines, okay? And Honda can do engines and power units and powertrains, whatever you want to call it. They can do that. It's never been a problem for them. It's not a problem for them on the roads. It's not a problem for them in any of the motorsport. Mm. It's a problem in Formula One because of the amount of rules and development restrictions that they've had. They've had to treat this entire first season as a test, as a winter test. And I think that's probably put off engine manufacturers such as BMW. There are other factors that have probably put off Volkswagen from entering the sport at the moment.
It's going to be a long time since you see Team VW.
Oh, yeah. Or VW powering anything, I think, at the moment. Yeah. Other than powering the courts and keeping a lot of people in...
keeping a lot of lawyers in a lot of expenses.
Yeah. Buying new houses for lawyers, I think, over the next 20 years is going to be what Volkswagen are pretty good at.
Hopefully ecological ones with solar panels on the roof and no emissions.
Yeah, self-heating houses, yeah.
Yeah.
self-heating houses that don't have to be tested.
The CEO of VW for just for
fun. No, they've changed his title. It's now the CO2.
Yeah. just for propaganda, he just walks around with a fern. I just like to give back.
Yeah, you want to be like a Volkswagen Forest or something near Wolfsburg in the next few years. Volkswagen to say, sorry, I planted an entirely new forest, and it'll be in the shape of the VW logo. Yeah, you watch, that'll happen.
But going back to Formula One.
Yeah,
if we may.
Yeah, that was talking about the future of Formula One.
But yeah.
The horrible truth is at the present that Red Bull might not be in Formula One next year.
Yeah. It would definitely be a shame to lose them and Toro Rosso.
And if that goes wrong, Lotus could go wrong. And if they go down the pan, you've also got Lotus not in Formula One next year.
But the other thing is as well, is the fact that they've turned around and said that if that team isn't on the grid, the factory will be repurposed, the personnel will all be kept on and dispersed in various roles throughout the Red Bull company. So when you think that since they've come into Formula One, they made it their business, including Adrian Newey, to buy the best people that were available to build a good team. So it's not just the cars we're missing and the drivers, it's all that personnel, all that talent that Red Bull have collected over the years.
Yeah,
that'll just evaporate out of the sport.
Mm. And all of a sudden Ben Ainslie will find his yacht doing about another 75 knots in the corners. Yeah. With no wind. Did you know that Ross Brawn's running that team?
Ross Brawn's running the team.
Ross Brawn is running Ben Ainslie's yachting team.
He's probably fishing off the back of it.
Probably knows some really good spots.
Yeah, only found that out on Sunday.
They're not really boats, though, are they? Let's be honest.
No.
And so it's somewhere in the world. There's a BMX bike going at like 120 miles an hour.
It's a plane with a wing in the water.
Yeah. Talking of what will happen if Red Bull's not there, Danny Ricciardo has said America is an option for him.
America is always an option, but...
But what would he be doing in America? Would he do Indy? Would he do NASCAR? Would he do the American Endurance Series, which I think they call the Le Mans Series?
The Le Mans Series?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it's not Le Mans. It's like the World Series of baseball. Isn't it, really? It's just like
baseball's got Canadian teams.
Yeah,
there was one made the quarterfinals or semifinals or something.
Yeah, but nobody else is allowed to enter. It's the World Series. Where's the Italians? Italians play baseball. But I completely lost my train of thought.
Yeah, we're talking about the American Le Mans Series.
Yeah, I think that Daniel Ricciardo would have to go into an open wheel racing. Mm-hmm. Sort of something like IndyCar.
So that leaves IndyCar. That's it.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, he might even go to something like LMP1. I know it's not necessarily American based, but
well, the American Le Mans Series is because that's what they're driving them.
Yeah.
Do you not think he's not ready for that yet? I wouldn't have thought.
I don't think he'll go off to something like World Endurance because that's something that's. Yeah, but if he's thinking America is an option.
Yeah, but he's a better driver than Hulkenberg, and Hulkenberg won Le Mans on his own. A skateboard.
He did.
Backwards.
Yeah. Nobody
blindfolded.
Nobody's better than Hulkenberg. Hulkenberg is the best driver in the world. That's why he's got all those podiums and wins.
Oh, yeah.
That's why he's so tall.
Yeah.
Gains height with every win.
Yeah.
That's why Rosberg is so short.
Tell me, what could we see him driving in IndyCar alongside the quality of drivers such as Sebastian Bourdais?
I do hope not. I think
two former Toro Rosso drivers. Be interested to see which one is better. I think
we already know the answer to that question.
I think if Red Bull stay in the sport and sort their fucking engine issues out and get an engine to start with. If these twin turbo engines, I think he could find himself in a race winning car again within a couple of years. You know, he might have another touch and go year next year.
Do you think he's one of those to hold out the pain at the moment and see what comes?
Doing a McLaren.
No, but see, I think
Fernando Alonso's entire career since 2006.
Mm.
Yeah.
It'll be over by Christmas.
It's always over by Christmas.
But I mean, just like, I can't imagine having drivers the caliber of Carlos Sainz, Verstappen, Ricciardo, and Kvyat.
Second half of the season, Kvyat.
Yeah, second half of the season, Kvyat. But just all of a sudden not being in Formula One. It's
no,
unfair.
It is massively unfair. But I mean, it's also unfair that people like Stoffel Van Dorn, you know.
No, because at the minute he was a good GP2 driver.
He's been an amazing GP2
champion. Yeah, he's
been
amazing. Yeah, but let's not be, to be honest, there's been a lot of GP2 champions. Felipe Nasr was a GP2 champion, wasn't he? Didn't he win it?
Felipe Nasr, I'm not sure.
Did he win the year before? No, Palmer won that year.
Yeah.
No, Nasr didn't.
But now let's see, Palmer is now waiting to get into Formula One. Looks like he has got a
seat. All I'm saying is that success in GP2 does not guarantee success in Formula One.
Nick Heidfeld. Okay, it was F3000, yeah, but it was the same. It was the same.
Yeah, yeah.
It was the next step down.
Yeah.
Nick Heidfeld. I mean, I made a joke before we started recording about Van Dorn can't get into McLaren now because it would Heidfeld up his career.
It's completely true.
Yeah. It would be a waste. It would be good for other series if they had the quality of those drivers in. But to be honest, you want the best drivers in the world in the premium motorsport series in the world.
Yeah. And if what you need to happen, or what I think needs to happen...
Sorry, the best drivers in the world and Pastor Maldonado in the best motorsport series in the world.
And what I think needs to happen as well is that, you know, all of the teams, not just some of them or, you know, a few of them, all of the teams need to be stable.
Yeah.
Financially and on the track, of course.
Yeah.
And world-class competitors in, you know, going back to the days when anyone could score a point when it was a top six.
Yeah.
You know, so I would like to see, you know, if 2016, all the teams have to have the same engine as the same spec engine for a customer
as the works team.
Yeah, thank you. That's putting my words in a much better order. I'm really looking forward to seeing Manor with next year's Mercedes engine in it.
Can I hit you all up with some knowledge?
Go for it.
Just what we were just talking about before.
Go on, man.
Previous GP2 champions.
Right.
We're talking about if the being successful in GP2 doth not make a Formula One driver.
No.
Guaranteed.
This is true. Yeah.
So 2005, Nico Rosberg.
Yep, 2000.
So, successful Formula One driver can have it. 2006, Lewis Hamilton.
Yeah.
Clearly
done. Not done bad.
Yeah. Doing alright.
2007, starts to get sketchy from here, guys.
Scott Speed.
Timo Glock.
Ooh.
Timo Glock was alright when he was in Toyota.
2008, Giorgio Pantano.
Oh my god! I completely forgot about him.
I think everyone's forgotten about him.
2009, it's everyone's favourite one-man army, Nico Hülkenberg.
Yes!
Did he win it on his own and he built the car? And
2010, Pastor Maldonado.
Yes!
He's won a race.
He's won a championship.
He's a GP2 champion, Pastor Maldonado. Get in.
2011, Romain Grosjean.
Well, no, fair enough.
Yeah.
The 2012, David Velsecki, however you say it.
Well, that's three Lotus drivers in a row.
Yeah. 2014, Julian Palmer. Oh, sorry, no, 2013, Fabio Lima. 2014,
yeah, he vanished
Palmer,
as well.
Stoffel Van Dorn.
He's in World Endurance now, isn't he?
Fabio Lima, is
he? Yeah, he's not even racing open wheels anymore.
Is it because he couldn't get a Formula One seat, or because there just wasn't one available?
It wasn't really good enough.
Probably wasn't one available. So. Was he the best of a bad bunch? So yeah, being a GP2 F3000 champion doesn't necessarily guarantee that you will go on to greater things.
No.
I mean, look at Jenson Button. He went straight from British Formula 3 into a Williams.
Yeah, he did. which is very, very rare.
And everyone said he was too young when he was 20.
Yeah, Max Verstappen does like one season in, was it European Formula 3?
Yeah.
And yeah, there was a big kickoff when he went into Formula 1, and look how spectacular he's
yeah, what is it, he'd done 14 or something single-seater races before, and everything else that he'd driven was a kart.
Yeah. Something like that. But yeah, no, I mean,
he's passed his driving test now.
He has. Yes. But yeah, getting back on track.
Woo! Oh, smooth.
Yeah, I want to see all the teams all up together and packed up nicely. Hopefully that 2016 engine rule, if only it does it for a single year before the twin turbos come in, make it a bit more exciting. You know, we chance for Haas to score points in their first few races.
Mm.
Chance for let's hope they're not too far ahead of Manor when they come into Formula 1.
Chance for Manor to get into Q2. Talking of Haas and Manor, interesting thing that's come out this weekend is everyone knows that Haas is going to be the Ferrari B team.
Mm-hmm.
Did
you see the press conference?
No, I've got to admit I missed it.
Esteban Gutierrez did the press conference for Haas.
He was only allowed
in
to
his Ferrari
Haas t-shirt.
No, he was in his Ferrari gear.
He was allowed to hold a Haas t-shirt.
Yeah, but when Grosjean did it, Grosjean had to wear the Haas t-shirt.
Yeah.
Well, Gutierrez did it, Gutierrez got to touch a t-shirt.
Yeah.
In his full Ferrari outfit. Sponsors and everything.
I think Gutierrez is going to be fucking rubbish next year. Rubbish. Yeah. I thought he was rubbish when he was at Sale, but I think he's going to be rubbish at Haas.
He had two moments of absolute brilliance in his one full year in Formula 1 so far. One of them was getting flipped upside down by Pastor Maldonado in Bahrain.
And then saying, what happened?
Yeah. What was that? Was it 1 year or 2 years he did in Formula 1?
I think he did one
in Sauber, I think, didn't he?
Yeah, one in Sauber. But yeah, no, Gutierrez...
Was it him and Kobayashi?
Oh, I can't remember.
Was that year?
It might have been. That's how much of an impact an anonymous Sauber made on us then. Even the cars were great.
Yeah,
that's it.
But yes, going back to my original point about Haas being the Ferrari B team and everyone expecting Manor to be the Mercedes B team, apparently they're not going to be. And Toto Wolff says that Mercedes are just going to be curious spectators.
Curious spectators.
See, Manor have lost a load of people, haven't they?
Manor have lost a load
They've
of people.
They've lost their design.
Although it hasn't been confirmed yet.
No, the designer's confirmed, isn't he? He's gone, he's left.
Bell.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's gone.
Yeah,
he's He's taken his Sticklebricks and Meccano with him.
Well, Booth and Loudon, there's a lot of no comment coming out of...
I said last week the best thing about Manor was Loudon's hair, and they've lost that.
Loudon's hair is cool.
Yeah.
Graham Loudon is a cool man from the northeast of England.
Good artist as well.
Is he?
Yeah, and he tweeted me because I told him, I said one of his pictures of James Hunt was really good.
Oh, brilliant. Does he draw?
He tweeted me saying thank you.
Does he draw or does he paint?
Yeah, he draws.
I had no idea. I must check that out.
He's really good.
That's news to me as well.
Yeah, I did not know Graham Loudon was an artist in that respect.
He's got to do something.
Apparently him and John Booth, there's talk of them setting up a WEC team.
Oh, yeah, I heard that.
But obviously there's no confirmation that they are leaving Manor.
But I mean, this is all down to Steve Fitzpatrick, isn't it, who is the OVO energy man.
Yeah.
Who
basically bought the team out of administration.
Yeah, who, okay, in all fairness, saved the team from death.
Yeah.
To be honest, though, we shouldn't be too, I've lost the words.
Harsh
or critical on his decisions, because that team has been in Formula 1 for a while now, doing absolutely pig all. So, who knows, what he's doing might be exactly what Manor need.
It could be a case of they're going because Mercedes or somebody from GM Chrysler, whatever the Daimler Chrysler Benz or whatever. Are dropping their own people in.
Well, it's possible that the man who put an awful lot of money into the circuit of the Americas, Tavo Helmond, could be looking to invest in a Formula One team. He has been present at all of the Grand Prix recently, whereas normally you only see him at the circuit of the Americas.
Mm-hmm.
He's becoming closer you know, his relationship with Bernie Ecclestone's getting closer and closer. So he's either angling at a second US Grand Prix at some point, or investment in the team. Now, I don't think Haas need any more investment at the moment. Manor, perhaps, do.
I don't think he'll invest in a team because, I mean, you talk about people that are into making money, and if you want to make money,
you don't invest in Formula One teams.
Another race that he will finance.
Well, you know the joke, don't you? How do you become a millionaire in Formula One?
Don't join.
Start out as a billionaire.
Yeah.
Richard Branson said that, didn't he? Apart from the year he had with Braun, there was talks for years about the Virgin brand coming into Formula One, and he said it's just a bottomless pit of money.
Yeah,
you just spend money.
Well, it's a marketing tool. A lot of the cars are just marketing tools. So that's what you got to look at.
I mean, don't get me wrong, it must work. Yeah, it must work. It must work for Red Bull. I don't know who sees a Red Bull car flying around the track and goes, oh, I need a can of that fucking horrible fizzy drink.
What, Monster? Actually, I quite like Monster. The Valentino Rossi lemon flavour is really nice.
I hate all energy drinks.
I if I'm really struggling, I will go for a Monster. Well, I've got to be really struggling.
It doesn't make me feel any better if I'm tired. It just makes me
talk lots.
Gives me heartburn. Every Red Bull gives you wings. Red Bull should give you Rennies with that.
Possibly. So yeah, I mean, there's a lot of uncertainty, I suppose, is the word around Manor at the moment. We know they're going to have a Mercedes engine next year.
Yeah.
We don't know about title sponsor. We don't know about.
I did notice they had another one-off sponsor on the rear wing this weekend. It was a local Mexican company. I didn't catch who, but there was something written on the rear wing. Wasn't three legs, four wheels there?
No, it wasn't.
I know what you're going to say about us not wanting to be on there, but two-thirds of tonight's podcast.
I would imagine that, and I will hold my hands up and say, might have something to do with me. I don't think our negotiations have gone very well with Manor.
Perhaps not. Perhaps they listen.
But you see, that's because I aim at trying to get us on a Formula One car.
But no, I think all this uncertainty around Manor has got to be new investors, whether that's Mercedes or somebody else, an American billionaire or whoever it is. It's got to be new investors that Mr. Fitzpatrick's looked at the team and gone, you know what? We need more money because this is going, you know, otherwise we're just going to be an independent team pissing about in the back forever.
Yeah.
And that's no good for anyone.
Which Minardi did for years, but Manor haven't even got the point about Minardi. Good coffee going for them.
No, Minardi would get points.
But every couple of years or so, they'd get a point.
Yeah, that's it, absolutely.
And usually by, when Minardi got a point, it was the seal of that guy's going to have a long.
Well, do you know where I have heard Minardi got most of their money from? Because how many top drivers started out in a Minardi?
Yeah.
They returned a percentage of their contracts and they got a percentage of their prize money.
Oh, right.
Mark Webber.
Fernando Alonso.
Yeah.
As it used to be known as in the olden days when we drove for Minardi, Alonso's off again.
Well, this is the crazy thing with Formula One. Fernando Alonso, when he came to Minardi and he did his first year with Minardi and onwards as well, you know, he had Telefonica sponsorship then.
Yeah.
You know, that guy came with, as we were saying before, Benjamins on top of Benjamins.
Well, yeah, absolutely.
He also had Briatore as his manager back then, which kind of helps as well.
Yeah, you see, that there's load-bearing Benjamins is what we've got. So he comes in with a load of money.
How much money can you stack on a Briatore?
I'm sure there's only one man who can answer that question. And I don't have his phone number.
But this is what confuses me with pay drivers now in Formula One, because when you used to, all drivers that come into Formula One come in with some sort of sponsorship. The difference is a few years ago they were really fucking good and they had sponsorship money.
They weren't. A few stood out. I mean,
Bertrand Gachot.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, okay.
Taki Deniz. Yeah, Pedro Deniz. Good
example. Pedro Deniz. Yeah.
Bad pay drivers, let me think. Nicola Larini. Mm-hmm. Bought his way into Ferrari, and what did he do with it?
Yeah, but these people are buying themselves in for a season. But then you're getting the likes of Pastor Maldonado, who I genuinely...
Giovanni Lavaggi.
Ooh! Jesus. Oh, what was that term?
Sounds like a pizza manufacturer.
Giovanni Pacific Ford, 1995, Giovanni Lavaggi.
Ricardo Rosset.
Ricardo Rosset, yes.
Yeah.
That Irish guy that Ralph Furman drove for Jordan for a year because
he was okay.
His dad owns a
team. He was very old when he came in, wasn't he, for Formula One?
He was very bad.
He was like 34. I don't think he was okay.
He was alright.
He was in a
Esteban Tuero.
Terrible driver.
Yeah,
but you talk about drivers here that
Pastor Maldonado
drifted out. But you know, but this is my point: is the drivers like Pastor. Which I genuinely think if you take his one win off him, if he didn't have that one win there, he's got a really good shout considering the races he's been in.
The shout is usually, get out of the way, you idiot, or why are you in my cockpit with me?
Oh, Jesus Christ, all the children are on fire now.
Talking of pay drivers, though.
But the thing is, like, he's got a real shout for the amount of time he's been in, the amount of races he's run, of being the worst Formula One driver ever. I think so.
Took that win away from him.
Yeah, if you take that win away from him. Now, he's still in the sport. He's got a fucking contract for next year, and he's probably going to be in 2017 and 18.
We'll see, but yeah, you're probably right. But you know, I was going to say, then talking about pay drivers, Will Stevens apparently has been told he needs to raise $10 million to secure his drive at Manor for next year.
Which means that he's getting a discount this year because he paid $500,000 for that one race in the Caterham Abu Dhabi.
Yeah.
Which basically equates to $10 million for a full season. Mm. So they've actually got him at a discount this season.
Yeah.
Mm.
Now he says that negotiations are progressing in the right direction.
He looked a lot better until they got Rossi in the car next to him, didn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now he looks it. If it proves one of two things. It proves Will Stevens not very good.
Or Rossi is really good.
I wasn't even considering the Rossi thing because I think Rossi's not bad anyway. I think he was second in GP2 championship. You know, he's a proper racing driver. But what it really does show you just how fucking shocking Roberto Meri is.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah. Second best hair in Formula One. Second best hair in the Manor team. Well, second most comedy hair.
Yeah, but he's more comedy. Tennis player hair, isn't he?
Well, I don't know.
Feathered and lethal.
I don't know. I mean, anybody remember the Jean Alesi Head and Shoulders advert where they dubbed an American accent?
Oh, Jesus.
Hi, I'm Jean Alesi. No, you're bloody not. You don't talk like that.
Yeah. I'm John Alesi.
That's pretty much what it was like. Yeah.
Why are we turning the USF1 guy?
Hey.
Hiya, Rich.
At least it wasn't the Jensen Button fucking racing, bracing.
Well, yeah, what was that?
Chasing.
That was another Head and Shoulders one.
It was.
I suppose that's all you see out the top of the cockpit, isn't it?
With Head and Shoulders.
Yeah.
tell you what, you'd have to check your bank account every time you saw that come on the telly, wouldn't you? Just go, oh my god.
Breathing. Relaxing.
Talking of headgear, conversation that we had that we decided to put on tonight's podcast is the quality of podium hats.
Yes.
Nice segue.
Been practicing. Keep getting funny looks off my cats, but I've been practicing. Now,
speaking of meow, what about those drugs?
getting me train of thought back on the rails. We had the Russian fur hats in Russia
in Sochi.
We've had sombreros this weekend. Austin missed a trick. They had Stetsons 2 years ago.
Yeah, they did.
Mm-hmm. Are we gonna see national hats at every race next season?
Bowler hats at Silverstone.
Bowler hats at Silverstone. Little caps with feathers in for Austria.
Or top hats, perhaps, at Silverstone.
Yeah. Berets in Belgium because it's the nearest thing to France.
Yeah.
I really fucking hope not.
I think it's funny.
I think the national novelty hat is great. Obviously, they'll all have to be wind tunnel tested by Nico throwing them.
Yeah, but I don't know. I think if you. When you look back at it,
it's a good marketing thing. It's funny.
Yeah, but I don't want it to be funny. I want it to be serious. It's fucking sport.
Yeah, but no, but
yeah, but how can the podium be serious when they keep letting EJ do interviews?
Yeah, and also every race.
Objection noticed. Noted even.
You know, look at the novelty headgear he's got. That thing that used to be a badger that sits on his head.
At the end of every race, before they get up on the podium, or as they're on the podium doing the national anthem, it's on your mind, even if you don't ask it. Wonder who's doing the podium interviews today. How funny would it be if, when they cross the line before they get in the core, you're thinking, I wonder what their hats are going to look like today?
Yeah.
I think it's something worth considering. Yeah. That.
Who's going to do the podium interviews? Please don't let it be George Lucas or Eddie Jordan.
Or John Surtees.
I've had some stupid ideas in the past for how we can fix Formula One. I've never thought we could fix Formula One with hats.
No, can't fix Formula One with hats, but it's fun. I don't care. If it's fun, do it.
Yeah.
However, sprinklers are fun. Don't do that.
Yeah, okay.
But yeah, chasing Eric Boulier. With a blackout parasol on the car nose. Just to make it more fun.
Sorry, that in joke.
You got the wrong
talking of McLaren.
We had a segment
in the podcast way back in like the early season called "What the Fuck, McLaren."
I think we had that in testing.
I mean, we did actually, yeah. But it's back purely because what the fuck, McLaren?
Yeah, I mean. Jensen didn't have the best of races. Fernando didn't have a race. What he said publicly was he knew he was only going to get one lap out of the car because...
Bullshit!
Yeah, Lee's got his tinfoil hat on.
In fact, we can't believe Stephen's conspiracy theory.
Actually, if they have an Alamac Grand Prix, they could wear tinfoil hats for that for our conspiracy theories.
Yes!
I have a Lee Stephen's conspiracy corner.
Oh, right. Tinfoil hats on, everyone!
In Parc Fermé, in qualifying... when Sebastian Vettel was doing his Schumacher bit, you know, looking at all the cars, he kept kneeling down, and when he was looking at the back end of the cars, he kept holding the cord that, you know, that comes off like the microphone as he was kneeling down looking at them. Now this caught my eye to the point where I rewound and watched it back a couple of times, and whenever he knelt down to look at the bits of the cars, he'd grab his thing. I want to know whether he's got a camera tucked on his helmet.
Because it'd be beyond Ferrari, would it?
It looked just like when you answer the phone on your headphones when you've got your headphones in. It was fucking weird.
Maybe he was just pressing the microphone button and telling people. No, it probably was a camera.
No, because it won't be because he's not connected to the car. Then is it?
Yeah, but is the radio pack in his
pocket? It's all connected because you see them pull it out. Don't
yeah,
you
but did he have another one that he was carrying with him at the spare battery?
Maybe, but
double tinfoil.
But what I found weird about that is usually as soon as the drivers get out of the car, especially in like qualifying stuff like that, they usually take the hats off straight away. By hats, I mean helmet.
Yeah,
and it just seems strange how long he had his helmet on for, and the fact that he went round and sniffing around all the cars first, because you think if he wanted to have a really good look at the cars, he'd have got a better look at them without a lid on.
Probably.
So yeah.
But anyway, back.
It's a
back,
good theory.
Yeah, it's a good theory. Back to McLaren. Now. Fernando said that the MGUH had gone after FP3.
Yeah, and they didn't have time to replace it.
Yeah. Got through qualifying, qualified ahead of someone, and then said that he'd only have one lap and wouldn't be able to race, but did it out of respect. Lee, you called bullshit on that earlier.
I think so. I think you saw in the last race when his car was going a bit wrong, and like the amount of cars that dropped out of that race... He could have been fucking six laps down and still ended up getting points the way it looked at one point in that route there. You know, and he's been very outspoken about being embarrassed about the situation the car's in. Look what Jensen did. All Jensen did was drive around on his own.
Yep.
And just got overtaken every time someone came up to him and stayed ahead of the manners and did well to stay on the same lap as the cars in front of him.
Jensen Button was faster than the manners, and that was it.
Yeah.
It was.
He only stayed on the same lap as the cars in front of him because he got to unlap himself behind the safety car.
For all intents and purposes, he was the slowest serious Formula One car.
Yeah, you know
how I feel about where the manners.
But I mean, the performance in Austin looked good. You know, McLaren looked pretty good in Austin. I was like, okay, yeah, maybe this running sixth and seventh is kind of flattering them a little bit because of the amount of retirements that they've been in.
But even like running up the hill with the Toro Rosso behind him, Button was able to defend. You know, he was able to fight with people.
But in Mexico, I don't know what happened. It's supposed to be another upgrade. I mean, it's supposed to be another upgrade. New parts. Jensen Button had a world record 70 place grid penalty.
Yeah, what was it? Two turbos, three MGUHs, and two ICEs?
Yeah, the only way...
Oh, and an MGUK as well.
Yeah, the only way he could serve that penalty really was from a fucking DeLorean.
That only did 88 miles an hour.
Probably
been faster than it. They right royally screwed up this weekend. What is going on?
They're going backwards again because they made a bit of progress.
They did say before this race this was going to be the most difficult race for them all year. Before the weekend even started.
Yeah, but I said that at Monza.
It wasn't particularly good, was it?
It wasn't good at Monza. But then we had Singapore, and it was okay. Japan, and then, you know, you had the...
Jensen would have got points at Singapore if it hadn't been for Maldonado.
Yeah.
Interesting fact, apparently they were pretty quick through the twisty bits.
They are. And that's been Ron Dennis's argument all year long, is that round corners, the McLaren is probably the most stable and fastest car... through a corner, but it's in straight line speed, just got nothing.
The car harvests the energy.
Well, look at how Jensen managed to keep Sebastian behind him for a lap.
Yeah.
So
comfortably until he got to the straight.
Yeah. Then he walked past him.
Yeah, pretty much. But he wasn't even halfway down the track. I'm not even sure they got to the point where they opened DRS and that had already started to make his move.
Cheerio.
Yeah. So embarrassing for McLaren, and it's just Jensen Button's already said he's looking forward to the winter. Good. I mean, I'm not looking forward to winter because that means, you know, we're going to get another season next year with McLaren being this awful.
I don't know, because they might, you know, Honda have got time to develop the engine in conjunction with McLaren redeveloping the car and maybe giving them more room in the back end to fit the parts in and actually not let them run as hot and maybe let things run at full pace.
The only thing positive that you can draw from this and where they are with the engines at the minute is the fact that when you get so much wrong and when you keep doing stuff that's wrong, there must be a point where you break so much stuff that the answer is blatantly obvious in front of you.
Rule out everything impossible and you're just left with what? That's got to be the answer.
Yes, Sherlock.
it's Poirot getting all the suspects into the drawing room.
I meant that
confirming
more.
Everybody's alibis.
I meant that when you eliminate the impossible, whatever's left, no matter how improbable, is probably the truth.
That's Occam's razor. That's pre-Sherlock Holmes.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
I thought it was Sherlock Holmes.
Well, yeah, Arthur Conan Doyle nicked it. It's an old one. Occam's razor.
I don't know. That's in books. I don't read books. People made films so we'd have to read books. And people made The Sun so I don't have to read news.
Oh, there's so much wrong with that.
Yeah, moving swiftly on, talking about films, I did call it about Williams getting James Bond sponsorship with the martini on the cars.
Yeah, we need to go back.
Why?
Because we haven't finished about McLaren.
There's nothing more to say.
Yeah, there is. There's Red Bull. Red Bull Honda engine shenanigans, yeah. Now,
yeah, but that's not McLaren. Well, that's not strictly McLaren.
It is, because if Honda want to supply Red Bull, are McLaren going to strain their relationship with Honda by stopping it? If Honda are desperate to get more engines in cars to try and get themselves sorted out for their company's honour, and Japanese love a bit of honour.
Yeah, but...
the Japanese love a bit of honour.
Yeah.
Right, mate. Love a bit of honour, do we?
Yeah, Lee, I've got the UN on the phone. Do you want to go be a diplomat?
I'd love to. One of two things would happen. I would fix everything, or I would stop everything. Either way, there would be only one more war.
You heard it here first.
I've already won it.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, Ron says that he does not want.
be the Terminator, wouldn't it? Be the only war he'd allow us.
Yeah, Chris is sat there wearing a Toto Wolf, I mean Terminator t-shirt.
Yes. Well, I think it's the Terminator. It could be Toto Wolf in sunglasses with Terminator written next to him.
You've just got the Resistance there going, I don't know what's wrong. Like, First of all, they're unstoppable killing machines, but their jokes are really quite crass sometimes.
Can we make a three legs, four wheels t-shirt that has a picture of Toto Wolf on it, but Terminator written on the side?
I think we should.
Because that would go down brilliantly amongst the Formula One fans.
I think we should.
Yeah, threelegsfourwheels.com and then Terminator with a Toto Wolf on it.
I think there's definitely a...
Over the winter, I will look at the edit. I'll look at some ideas for... we'll look at some ideas for merchandise.
There's definitely a... just blame pasta.
Just blame pasta.
I wonder if Cafe Press is still going and we'd have to print them ourselves. Anyway, we are actually recording this, so we should probably be talking about things. Honda and Red Bull. Yeah, I mean, Ron has said, no, that is it. No, that is my last word on the subject. No.
Did you hear what Eric Bulliez said about it?
Not a great deal,
because all Eric Bulliez has said this season is, I do not know. I don't know what's going on. He had more to say.
He said McLaren are not a charity organisation. They're not in the business of helping people. Could we talk about Red Bull?
Eric Bulliez said that.
Yeah.
This is Eric Bulliez, who's been as forthcoming with information as a combination of Jose Mourinho and Arsene Wenger for all the football fans. During his press conference this weekend, he just repeated the phrase, I have nothing to say for 5 minutes solid.
I'd just like to point out, McLaren's Instagram have posted today a picture of Fernando Alonso with the caption, "Top shots from the Mexico GP." It's like, how good was that photographer to get that photo of Fernando Alonso in one lap? To be fair, he is probably going quite slow.
Yeah.
Quite slow. As far as Eric Bulliez goes and the sort of the lack of Bulliez talking, he must have just been in the press office and someone said, yeah, we need you to go and speak to the press. He's like, I don't want to. He said, oh, it's a real opportunity for you to be a twat. I'm there.
We have given Eric Bulliez some stick on this podcast over the last few months, and quite frankly, he bloody deserves it.
he's been so anonymous, I wouldn't be surprised if he turned up at Sauber next year.
He is the only guy in the F1 paddock that can fade into the foreground. Please don't take our media accreditation away, McLaren.
You've been saving that one, haven't you?
No, that one just came to me. I think that one off Terry Pratchett. That's another person that wrote books.
But, oh, those paper things we were on.
Right, you know, chunky magazines, but a bit smaller.
Loads of pictures?
No.
At first.
Oh.
Right. Pasta disaster predictors.
Yeah. Dan gave his on the podcast last week, which was a fourth consecutive point finish.
Incorrect.
They got the finish part of it.
Pastor did finish, although he did leave the circuit a couple of times.
He had a very near miss with a wall in the stadium because he kind of forgot.
I think he just wanted the phone number off the advert that was on the side. one of those ripping the business cards off there.
Kept reading the small print as I put on the live block.
Yes, reading the small print. I had two goes at the Pasta Disaster Predictor, which I know is against the rules, but my second guess was when I thought it might rain heavily, which never materialised.
So 90% chance of rain, it didn't happen.
Yeah, I had an inkling of something happening and thought, you know what, if it rains heavily with 40 minutes of this race to go, something's going to happen.
I'm relying on being still in it with 40 minutes to go, but
I switched it up. I went lap one, turn two.
Whoa, lap one, turn two.
But yeah, I was wrong.
Yeah, on Twitter from Ryan, we had lap one, turn three, after screwing up, turn two. I like your thinking there.
No, that's always a possibility with Pasta.
I forgot mine was round about pit stop window. It was about lap 14.
Lap 16, turn like, 5.
Lap 16, turn 5.
I don't remember what my initial... Well, I don't remember what both of my predictions were. But I sort of have an inkling what my second one was. So I was waiting for Lee to bring that up now on the...
You even sent it in two emails.
I did.
You're making him read twice.
I'm making him press the button.
Is this a book?
Yes, dear.
Right. With that long straight, car 13, straight into 13 place, into 13 place on the grid, have a lap one, turn one.
Which was incorrect. But then I had a second guess, which was, if it's possible, more incorrect. But this was based on... this was based on rain.
However, if it rains, and proper rains...
Well, not like that fake rain.
Then anything,
like dirty sprinklers.
Then anything could happen. Pasta could win the race. But if he finishes on the podium.
And then I put hides.
Yeah.
Because I knew I had to hide from people after saying that Pasta could finish on the podium.
Yeah. That would take a lot of other disasters, possibly that he caused.
Yeah. You never know.
Stranger things have happened. I'm just stuck for thinking of any at the minute.
Mm. Oh, yeah, he won a race.
Yeah, okay, I'll go with that. Do we have anything else on here? I can see some scribbling, and it looks like donuts from where I'm sat.
No, that was the Pasta Disaster.
Oh, right.
You still didn't answer me when I said, do you think it's going to stretch McLaren, Honda, and Red, like their relationship?
I wouldn't think so.
I don't think it'll make it go to Red Bull and Renault levels.
I think Honda have to get things right before, with McLaren, before they can even start thinking
about
being in other
teams. What if they think they need
more
cars in the grid? They need more engines.
What, so they can supply the whole grid and then everybody be on a level playing field?
No,
because everybody will have 70 place grid penalties.
Yeah.
Yeah.
McLaren will still be fifth. But,
Hulkenberg will still be fifth at some point.
He'll obviously be fifth. Mind you saying that, they might have an extra engine on the grid next year if Red Bull and Toro Rosso pull out.
Well, that is true.
And Lotus fold for.
Remember the old days when the silly season just used to be about drivers?
Yeah, now it's about teams.
Yeah, and silly drivers.
We'll hear lots of sort of growling noises from Ron, which we hear anyway.
Mm-hmm.
We won't hear a thing out of RI-san because he only speaks to Japanese print media. As he makes quite clear. And we'll just get lots and lots of press releases saying we're doing what we can to repair the relationship.
Mm.
If there is anything to repair. Which we're not going to tell you whether there is or not, says Eric. So, I don't think it's not going to make Honda happy if McLaren use their veto. But as we've seen,
there's obviously pressure in there somewhere. Mm. When you've got, is it Mr. Arai?
Yeah.
When he's in, he's in the press conference saying that discussions are still ongoing about supplying Red Bull. And then, yeah, in a press conference before that, Eric Blue was saying, well, no, we don't want any of that. No, you can't have that. They can't have our engines.
I mean, the problem is giving teams veto is bound to lead to pissing somebody off anyway, because look what's happened with Ferrari this weekend. Most of the team principal's press conference that wasn't directed at Mr. Outright was all aimed at Arriva Bene, saying, why did you use your veto?
Yeah.
And he just kept rolling out the line of commercial interests.
Yeah.
So...
Would Stefano Domenicali have used the veto?
I don't think it was up to... It wouldn't have been Arriva Bene's decision. That would have been a board of...
That would have come from the top of Ferrari.
Yeah. Sergio Marchionne.
Yeah.
It might have been delivered by Arriva Bene.
But don't shoot the messenger.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because if it's commercial interests, Arriva Bene is there to run the race team.
Mm-hmm.
He is not there to make commercial decisions on behalf of an international car manufacturer and car parts manufacturer.
Yeah.
Which the whole Ferrari, Fiat, the Maranello group are. So that has come from probably his boss's boss's boss.
Do Ferrari own Alfa Romeo?
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, no, Fiat own Alfa Romeo. No,
Ferrari owns Fiat.
No, Fiat own Ferrari.
Oh, Fiat own Ferrari, yes.
Yeah. I was only interested because I noticed the Ferrari's grown an Alfa Romeo sign on the side of it.
Has it?
Yeah, this on the back end of the...
Yeah, Fiat own Ferrari things. And Fiat also own Alfa Romeo.
Mm-hmm.
Alfa Romeo's new road car for all the road car geeks out there. Has a top spec the top spec model that you can get with it has an engine developed by Ferrari in it. So yes, they do work very closely together.
That would be an interesting idea then, wouldn't it?
An Alfa Romeo Formula One team.
Well, if Ferrari were to supply another team like
Haas,
Red Bull,
and call it with last year's engines, which they now can't do because they vetoed it.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. Could we see other brands? I mean,
Alpha. I think
Red Bull, Alfa Romeo.
I should have pointed this out before about the Red Bull.
That's a mouthful.
Joking about it. I think Red Bull will leave the sport next year. I think Toro Rosso will stay.
We'll see.
Mm.
Interesting prediction. Obviously, if you've got any thoughts on this, drop us a tweet. Reply on the webpage because the comments are open on the webpage that we host the podcast on.
Yep.
And let us know what you think. I'm glad to
of course, that. If you disagree with me, you're probably wrong. Everyone's allowed an opinion, but some opinions are more equal than others.
So, we'll be back next week after we've taken Lee's ego outside and shot it.
It's bulletproof.
With a silver bullet. We may have Dan back with us next week if he's not being a secret agent.
It's not a werewolf.
Okay.
Say goodbye, Lee.
Goodbye, Lee.
We'll see you next week.
Bye.
Bye-bye.